to the couch. Now this week, I don't know, I found myself pretty confused. You, like me, no doubt, are on social media, you're listening to the news, you're watching all of the television programs and reading all of the media on what is best for our health. And it seems like everybody's an expert. It seems like everybody's got an opinion and everybody wants to tell us that what we're doing is wrong and that we need to exercise and eat the way they recommend. But here's the question that I've got for us. As humanity and as a society, we are more focused on our health and our well-being than what we ever have been in the past. Yet we are fatter, we are sicker, we are more unhealthy, we've got more people going through IVF to have children. What is going on with our bodies and what's going on with us and where are we going wrong? I really felt like it was super important that here on Karen's Couch, we started to dive deep into finding out the truth. Really getting behind the science of preventative medicine and really getting to understand what research exists out there that we can slip into our hip pocket and use as a tool for ourselves to start making informed decisions as to what's best for us when it comes to fats, when it comes to sugars, when it comes to our diet, and when it comes to obesity and when it comes to our health and well-being. We've got to pay attention, people, because as a society, we are paying with pain. So today, I've gone to the ends of the earth and I have brought you somebody exceptional. Today, we have Dr. David Katz joining us on Karen's Couch. He's one of America's top physicians specializing in preventative medicine. And he's a founding director of Yale University's Prevention Research Center. So join me. Get really excited. Join me in welcoming David Katz to the couch today. Like I said, it's time to get excited and welcome Dr. David Katz to Karen's Couch. Thank you so much, Dr. Katz. Would you prefer that I refer to you as Dr. Katz or David, or what works best for you?
I think if we're sharing a couch, Karen, we should be personal, if not intimate. So I think David works well.
Terrific. Thank you. David, I'm really excited about today's show because for me personally, and I love to use myself as the guinea pig because, you know, I'm involved with so many different things and the couch is really about following the things that I get passionate about and really intrigued and curious about. And something that a lot of our followers and myself have been questioning of late is, what are we supposed to do with our diet? What are we supposed to do with ourselves? There is so much information out there and everybody's claiming to be the expert. Everybody's claiming to know. But yet, you know, we can follow certain diet regimes and it makes no difference. And I'll use myself as a classic example that I've tried just about every diet on the planet and it never has given me the results that I've wanted, especially not in the last 15 years, I think. I mean,
You look pretty good from here, I have to say.
You're so sweet. Well, just recently, about a year ago, I became vegan because I'm an animal lover and I found what I was thinking up here was affecting how I was digesting my food. Because it was just devastating to me to think that I was eating animals and then I'd be sick and inflamed. And I lost about 8 kilos since I went to vegan.
Right.
And it's been really fabulous for me. But I also still know that there, from a point of view, I still have that big, you know, rotundness around here that I'm sure has got stress. And then it comes back to, is it my genes? Because my mum's got that too, you know, and my grandmother had that. You know, am I genetically predispositioned to carry this spare tire around? Everybody's giving advice. Everybody's telling us what we should be doing. And then we also hear the contrary, and it's so confusing. And it's my
job to sort all that out, huh?
Over to you. I'm relaxing. Ready, go.
Let me take that on. So there are quite a few important issues in that question. Again, I think you look terrific. So if you look like that and you feel well, then you're doing just fine. So just keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
I can relate to the issue of veganism because of concern about animal welfare, I too am an animal lover. I don't eat mammals. Four of my best friends on the planet have four legs apiece, three dogs and a horse. So I do include some animal foods in my diet, but I eat mostly plants. So several important issues that you brought up. First, you know, is your family history your destiny? Is your DNA your destiny?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Karen, we're now more than a decade into the genomic age. And actually, we've sort of left the genomic age behind. What we've come to realize is we're in the epigenomic age or the epigenetic age. And what that refers to is the environmental influences that actually change what our genes do. Now, in rare cases, DNA is destiny. If you have the gene for a condition called Huntington's chorea, then you get it. If you have the genes for sickle cell anemia, then you get it. But the things that affect most of us, and this is true both in Australia and the States, you know, the big concerns are things like heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, these common diseases, obesity. These are not determined by a single gene. They're determined by the behavior of many genes. And we have very powerful evidence to show that our lifestyle choices change the behavior of our very genes. So, for example, if you adopt an optimal lifestyle program, and this has been studied and reported in some of the top journals, you can take genes that promote cancer and turn them off. And you can take genes that suppress cancer and turn them on. And similar results have come in related to diabetes and heart disease and weight. So what I think we are learning in the modern age is that DNA, for the most part, is not destiny. And to a far greater extent, dinner is destiny. In other words, the things we do in our daily lives are powerful enough to alter the behavior of our very genes. So really, control resides in our hands. Then in terms of how great is the power, both to alter gene expression and to do things like prevent chronic disease. And again, I'm talking about all the bad stuff that happens to people we love that we don't want to have happen to people we love, and we don't want to have happen to us. Heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, all the common things, arthritis.
Yeah, yeah.
So how great is the potential power here? Well, there's a literature spanning now two decades. And the first paper that really set it in motion was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, so one of our top medical journals, in 1993,
right.
So 21 years ago. The paper was entitled Actual Causes of Death in the United States. And what the authors did was look at all of the premature deaths that occur in our country every year. And that's a lot because there are a lot of us. And identified what was causing the conditions that were listed on the death certificate. So, you know, for example, if someone dies prematurely of a heart attack, to say that the cause was disease of the heart isn't very helpful. What these two authors, Drs. McGinnis and Feige, wanted to know was what caused the disease of the heart that in turn caused the heart attack that caused the death. Well, they answered that question. And the answer was that almost all of the premature deaths in the U.S., and this is true of Australia and all of the developed countries around the world, were attributable to a list of just 10 factors that every one of us has the potential to control in our daily lives. And today, seated on your couch, we don't have to talk about all 10 because it was the first three, just the first three on that list that accounted for 80% of all the chronic disease and all the premature death. And those first three factors were tobacco use, dietary pattern, and physical activity. In other words, if we were to, it's incredible, if we were to optimize our daily use of our feet, our forks, and our fingers, we could potentially reduce our lifetime risk of all major chronic disease by 80%. Now, you know, really, there's never been a Nobel Prize in medicine for anything with a greater power than that. So it's incredible. So the challenge then becomes, how do we get there from here? Now, the final part of your question is, you know, what about the confusion? There's a competing diet out every week, every
Absolutely.
Month. There's a new fad diet. Right? Yeah. So, you know, the way I look at that, Karen, frankly, there's a bit of collusion there. And I would say, and, you know, sort of, you know, looking through my lens here and you know, to everybody watching, I'm looking you in the eye and saying we have met the enemy and it is us. In our massive gullibility. I mean, come on, people. How likely is it that everything we thought we knew about the basic care and feeding of Homo sapiens changes every week. Now, we would never believe that about anything important. We wouldn't believe that about raising children. We wouldn't believe it about education. We wouldn't believe it about managing our money. Why is it we're willing to believe that about diet and nutrition? We are not clueless about the basic care and feeding of our species. We know the fundamentals of healthy eating, and the fundamentals do not change week to week. And the answer is not to go on a diet or wait for the next great fad diet to come out, but to adopt the fundamentals of healthy eating that you can embrace for a lifetime and share with the people you love, including your children, because in unity there is strength. And I'll pause for a second to see if you have a follow-up question, Karen, but I've done a recent research study comparing all of the different claims about best diets for both health and weight, and I am very happy to share my conclusion. But I think we know what that pattern is. And so not smoking, very straightforward. Being physically active on a regular basis, pretty straightforward. Where there is confusion is in the area of diet. But it's the problem is I don't think we're as confused as we pretend to be. I think everybody knows, for example, that broccoli is good for them. So I think what we're doing is sort of indulging in wishful thinking. Well, gee, I wish it were effortless. I wish I could eat whatever tastes good and whatever feels good and however much I want, and there was magical pixie dust to make me lose weight and be healthy in spite of it all. And so we keep lining up again and again and again for silly fad diets. So we're part of the problem. The authors of these silly fad diets, many of whom are physicians, are part of the problem because I think they're exploiting that public gullibility in order to make money. And then, of course, the book publishers and the media who are willing to tell us every week there's some brand new way to lose weight and find health. I worked for Good Morning America for about 2.5 years, several years ago, and was on air reporting for them a couple times a week. And, you know, I was basically asked to cover a different diet every week. And, you know, I would push back and say, you know, I'm a preventive medicine expert. The fundamentals of healthy eating don't change every week. You know, fruits and vegetables are still good for people this week. How about we give people a consistent message? So, you know, the media definitely keep us confused because that keeps us tuning in, right? If there's a brand new diet to fix everything this week, that's interesting. Let's tune in.
And whoever stands to profit from all of that, you know, it becomes a whole other conversation then, because it's not about doing what's best for humanity. It's about doing what's best for the hip pocket of the fat cat that gets paid in the end.
Gee, what a surprise that is. I'm stunned. Say it ain't so. Yeah, no, absolutely. So like everything else, you know, way too much of this is about money. But, you know, I think you really addressed it very poignantly at the beginning. You know, we're talking about real people, your viewers, your family members, my family members. I know people affected by heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes. I love people affected by this. So I'm a physician. I could be talking about my patients. I don't even need to go that far. I can just think of my own family and the people I love. Well, 80% of that stuff doesn't have to happen in my family, in your family. I mean, we're talking about real people, real lives, and as you said, real pain. We're paying for this in our pain, and we could stop paying if we applied good science and good sense. That's really the solution, is blending science and sense. We can get out of this mess.
I love that, blending science and sense, because I think that that gives us a bit of direction. I think the confusing part about it is we're trying to pay attention. Certainly the people watching this show and their families and friends, they're trying so hard to pay attention, but they're still paying with pain. So we're getting it wrong. There's a disconnect in terms of what we see, what we believe and what we do, and then the outcome. And I think that largely that all comes back to that fat cat and the, you know, and the financial benefits. But I think I think too, we're confused from the feedback that we get. There seems to be a confusion between do I eat a high fat diet or do I have a high fruit diet, like, you know, natural sugars. I think we all know that white sugars and refined sugars, you know, they're a thing of the past, and you know, they're not necessarily the best thing for us. But in terms of natural sugars, do I have fats? Do I have sugars? Do I have carbohydrates? Do I have proteins? Where do I go?
Good.
Well, something works all for right. my sister, but it doesn't work for me. And then I look at the kid across the road and he's battling with obesity because the family's education about what's healthy. And I only read an article yesterday, and please forgive me rambling a little bit, but I read an article yesterday when I was doing some research for the show saying that there's a – do you guys have Gatorade? In America?
We do.
You have Gatorade?
Sure we do. Yeah, no, we invented it here. Yeah. well, we exported it to you. Well, in fact, you know, it was actually invented at the University of Florida. The name of the sports team there is the Gators, because alligators are indigenous to Florida. So they actually invented it at the University of Florida for the football players to drink when they were working very hard in the heat. And that may have made sense, but now everybody drinks the stuff, and that doesn't make sense. So, yeah. Anyway, carry on.
And there was a physician advocating for people to drink Gatorade rather than coconut water. And I looked at that, and I thought, gosh, that to me doesn't make sense, but am I right? To me, it doesn't make sense that I would drink something that's made in a lab versus something that's made inside of a coconut. It doesn't make sense, but am I right?
Yeah, I think you are. So let me mention this work I did recently. I was invited by an academic journal. It's entitled Annual Review in Public Health, and as the name suggests, that's what it's about. It's important topics in public health and a summary of where we are that can be published. And the request to me, and this came in about 18 months ago, was we would like you to review the literature on claims about diets for health and weight loss and answer this question: can we say what diet is best for health? And the reason I was asked to do this is I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't really care, Karen, which diet is best for health. I care about the truth and sharing truth and empowering people with the truth. So I'm not trying to sell a particular diet.
Fantastic.
What I would like to do is help people add years to life and life to years. That's my job. That's my mission in life. So the journal knew this. They knew that I've authored 3 editions of a nutrition textbook for healthcare professionals. So I seemed like the right guy to do this job. Well, I did this job, reviewed the literature to the best of my ability without bias, and looked at claims for vegan diets and vegetarian diets and Mediterranean diets and low-fat diets and low-carb diets and high-protein diets and low-glycemic diets and almost every other variation you can think of.
Right, and what did you find?
And let me get right to the punchline. What jumped out at me was that all of the diets that perform well, whether they're in large population studies or smaller intervention studies, all of the diets that perform well share common features. They're about real food, in other words, stuff that doesn't glow in the dark, right? I mean, you're talking about Gatorade. I mean, you look at that stuff, it looks like it would glow in the dark, right? That can't be a good thing. So it's all about real food from the real world. You know, you can identify what it is and where it came from. You recognize it as food. Real food, mostly plants. Even a paleo diet, and that was included too.
Yeah.
That's very popular these days.
Yes, it is.
But you know, our Stone Age ancestors ate a wide variety of wild plant foods, and then they ate game. So that, you know, the meat they ate was like antelope. Mm. They ate mammoth. You know, it's hard to find a mammoth these days, but you know, they certainly weren't eating grain-fed cattle.
They
certainly weren't eating pastrami or bologna or salami or, you know, none of this stuff, or pepperoni, the stuff that we eat today.
Yeah.
So they ate a diet of mostly plants, and then they ate the flesh of animals that in turn ate mostly plants. So even a paleo diet is real food, mostly plants.
Yeah.
That theme is common to all of the diets that perform well, all of them. And the diets that don't adhere to that theme don't perform well. So, for example, you know, the early version of the Atkins diet, which was a lot of saturated fat and meat and did not include a variety of plants, actually did not perform terribly well when you look at metabolic factors. Now, most of the argument then, most of the my diet can beat your diet that we're subject to every week, is about the elements of these diets that don't overlap. So, you know, I'm going to focus on lowering the glycemic load, and you're not. And I'm going to focus on restricting fat, and you're not. Here's the beauty of honoring the theme, Karen. If you eat a diet of real foods, mostly plants, and so what that means is vegetables, fruits, beans, lentils and other legumes, nuts, seeds, whole grains, and yes, I do advocate for whole grains, despite the popularity. I do, despite the unless you're gluten sensitive and need to avoid them. But you know, people who have a peanut allergy have to avoid peanuts. That doesn't mean they're toxic. It just means some people have to avoid them. Same with whole grains. If you're sensitive to gluten, avoid it. Otherwise, whole grains are a rich source of a wide variety of vitamins and minerals and a great source of fiber, and most of us get too little of that. So vegetables, fruits, beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, whole grains, with or without lean meat, dairy, eggs, fish, seafood, poultry, those are all up to you. Those can be added on. But if your diet is mostly made up of those plant foods, and if as many of them as possible come direct from nature so that the ingredient list is short.
Yeah, right.
You know, ideally just one word, right? I mean, you know, the ingredient list in spinach is
spinach,
right? I mean, you know, the closer you get to that, the closer you are to the bullseye. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming that this basic theme of healthful eating is associated with great outcomes. What do I mean by great outcomes? Well, there's a study called the Blue Zone Study, and the whole purpose of this was to look around the world at all the different populations and identify those places where people have the best health. The best health defined really by three things: living the longest, having the least disease, and being the happiest. And that, you know, that's a pretty important measure, being
happy.
And, you know,
everything.
I mean, one of the great reasons to care about our health is because healthy people have more fun. So these are people who, they often live to be 100. They have very little chronic disease. They don't get dementia. You know, they stay sharp. They stay strong. And they're happier. Their lives are better. Well,
and where were they? Where were those people living?
Well,
where would we
They live in Okinawa, Japan.
Ah.
They live in Crete, in Greece. They live in other places around the Mediterranean. They live in California. There's a group of Seventh-day Adventists who, like you, it's a large population. They're vegan. They don't smoke. They have strong social connections. And by the way, Karen, to me, the formula for healthy living, the top three things I already mentioned, feet, forks, and fingers. So physical activity, eating well, not smoking. But the next three that also really count are sleep, stress, and love. Getting enough sleep, managing stress in our lives. We can't avoid it, but we can manage it effectively. Mm. And love. And you know, it can be romantic love. That's great. But frankly, just strong social connections.
Yeah.
People to care about who care about you. If you get those six right, if you fire on those six cylinders, feet, forks, fingers, sleep, stress, and love, everything else is vanishingly less important. So the people who live in blue zones, the Okinawans, the Cretans, people in parts of Italy, people in other parts of Greece, people in parts of Spain, the Seventh-day Adventists in California, people in other parts of Asia, the people all around the world who live most often to be 100, who have the best health, the least chronic disease, and are the happiest, they get those six things right. And their diets all share that feature of being real foods, mostly plants. Now, the interesting thing is, in Greece, in Crete, in other parts of the Mediterranean, it's a relatively high-fat diet.
Mm.
But the healthy fats come from nuts, seeds, olives, avocado, olive oil, and to some extent, fish and seafood.
Yeah.
They may get up to 40% of their calories from fat, but it's
healthy
fat, healthy foods, and they do great. In contrast, in Okinawa and other parts of the Far East, the diet may have as little as 10% of the calories from fat. So very, very different. Wide ranges in carbohydrate and fairly wide ranges in protein. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
We tend to fixate way too much on nutrients, and we miss the forest for the trees. If you focus on a diet made up of a variety of healthy foods, wholesome foods, and you know, again, I think we all know what those are, and you put them together in a reasonable combination so you have, you know, a decent variety of them, the nutrients tend to sort themselves out. This was the conclusion we reached in our paper. You can have a low-sugar diet and have a terrible diet. You can have a low-fat diet and have a terrible diet. You could have a low-carb diet and have a terrible diet.
Mm.
You can pick any nutrient you like, any ingredient you like. You could have a gluten-free diet and have a terrible diet. But you can't have a diet of real food, mostly plants, variety, and wind up with a terrible diet. You're almost certain to do well, and all of the nutrients take care of themselves. It can be higher and lower in fat, but if it's higher in fat, it tends to be healthy fat. It can be higher and lower in carbohydrate, but even if it's higher in carbohydrate, it tends to be complex carbohydrate with a low glycemic effect, and that's still good. If you get the foods right, the nutrients tend to take care of themselves. That was really the key conclusion of this paper.
Yes.
The theme of healthy eating is well established. We cannot say which specific diet is best because those studies haven't been done. Imagine, Karen, a study that asks someone like you who wants to be a vegan to be randomly assigned for the rest of your life either to be a vegan or to have a paleo diet where you have to eat a lot of meat. Mm. You would never sign up for that. I mean, most people have an inclination to eat a particular way. Yeah. So those studies have never been done. I don't think they ever will be done.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can say, and I don't think we'll be able to say anytime soon, is an optimal vegan diet better than an optimal Mediterranean diet or an optimal paleo diet? But frankly, who cares? Let's get to the common theme of healthful eating. And then the beauty of not knowing which specific diet that adheres to that theme is best means you get to choose the diet that adheres to the theme that you like best, that works best for you and your family. And that's a beautiful thing because, you know, yes, we want the pleasure of good health, but I think we also want to enjoy our food. And my wife and I advocate for loving the food that loves us back. I think there's a real opportunity to do that.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. I think that that kind of, and I don't know about all of our viewers and our listeners, but I feel like, you know, a knot that was in my stomach is kind of untied a bit. I feel a bit, you know, I feel a bit relaxed about that because there's, you know, I'm so conscious that I eat the right foods and that I do the right things for my body. But, you know, I do travel a lot, so I find it very challenging, particularly, and I mean no disrespect, but particularly when I travel to the States, it's very, very challenging because everything is fried. I mean, the broccoli is fried. So it's that in and of itself is quite a challenge. But other than that, I'm very aware of it and it's the forefront of my mind and it's been like that since I was 8. And yep. Now I'm at a point in my life where I think I just don't want to be consumed. And I know that our viewers and our listeners are the same. We put so much energy into what we eat and how we eat that it's all consuming. Whereas if we can just get rid of all of that,
rid of all
that. Yeah. And as you say.
And it's interesting. I'm a physician. I take care of our patients. But I recognize that health is not the prize. The prize is having the life you want to have. The prize is living well, enjoying being happy. And the reason that health matters, the reason that eating well matters, is because they help us have a better life. Healthy people really do have more fun. So what the last thing you want to do is be so preoccupied with being healthy that you forget to have fun. That's the whole point of being healthy, is to have a better life. So I think we can relax.
So true.
We can adhere to the theme of healthful eating. Then the other thing is, Karen, it's not enough to know, you know, what does healthy living look like. You have to start there because you can't get where you're going if you don't know where you're going. You have to know where there is. And I argue we do. We know what it means not to smoke. We know what it means to be physically active. I argue we absolutely do know what it means to eat well. We really do. We are not confused. Hmm. We are not confused. We really are not. Read my lips. We are not confused.
Are we irresponsible?
Well, a little bit in the sense that sensible people, I don't think, sign up for get-rich-quick schemes week after week after week. Sensible people recognize, you know, you need a steady job, you have to take care of your money, you have to think about how you're going to pay the expenses to raise your children, take care of retirement. So, you know, I think we watch sitcoms to see people be silly with their money, right? You know, it's before your time, but there's an old sitcom here, The Honeymooners, and it was all about a guy who drove a bus who kept signing up again and again and again for a get-rich-quick scheme. And it's funny because, you know, he's gullible and sensible people don't do that. But we do exactly the same thing when it comes to lose weight fast or get healthy fast, as opposed to accepting this is for the long haul. I need to invest in my health over the course of my whole life, just like I take care of my money and my job and my family. This is serious stuff. So we're a little bit irresponsible. It's also a bit irresponsible to go on diets and leave our family behind. I'm editor-in-chief of the academic journal Childhood Obesity. I have 5 children of my own.
Right.
In an age of epidemic childhood obesity in both Australia and the States, yes, it's a bit irresponsible to go on a diet that doesn't involve the rest of your family. So we're a little bit irresponsible. But I think we are also a bit abused. There's an author in the States who writes for the New York Times named Michael Moss. He has a book out called Salt, Sugar, Fat, and he's an investigative journalist who details how the food industry has engineered foods we can't stop eating. They've designed them to be addictive. Yeah, well, that's not a fair fight. So that was the next thing I was going to say. So yes, we know where there is. We know what healthy living looks like. The next thing we need, I think, is a travel guide, you know, a navigation tool to help us get there from here. And if I may, and I don't want to be self-promoting, but my latest book...
Please, by all means, go ahead. I mean, we've come to the end of the show, so it's a perfect opportunity for you to tell us. I mean, I know that our audience that's listening and watching would be thinking to themselves, where can I get more?
Well, thank you. And I know you're going to share access with your audience to this paper, Can We Say What Diet Is Best for Health, so people can read the details, and that's available to everybody online. Yeah. But I have my latest book is called Disease Proof. And what I decided to do, most of my time, effort, my career is devoted really to changing the world. I'd like to make it easier for people to be active, eat well. My lab develops programming for schools and for supermarkets and for churches. But we can't just keep waiting on the world to change, to quote John Mayer. We have to take matters into our own hands so we can be healthy today. So what I did in Disease Proof, I basically inventoried my own skill set. What are all the things I know how to do? Because like you, I travel a lot, but I eat well anyway. I have a hectic schedule, but I exercise anyway. And I thought, well, this is really not about willpower. It's not just wanting it. It's about skill power. It's about knowing how to trade up food choices so you can love the food but have it love you back. It's about how to become familiar with better food choices in every category so that your taste buds adjust and they actually reward you for choosing the better food, not that highly engineered addictive food. It's about all the different ways there are to fit physical activity into your daily routine, no matter what your daily routine looks like. So there's always a way to fit fitness in. It's about skill power. So I basically took my skill set as an expert in preventive medicine and filled up 300 pages of a book with it. I said, I can pay this forward. Everybody can learn to do this. It's not rocket science. There's nothing special about me. You know, a pilot isn't necessarily the best person, but they know how to fly a plane. Well, we could all learn how to fly a plane, but you have to learn how. Mm-hmm. I would argue that healthy living is easier than learning to fly a plane, but similarly, in the modern world, you have to learn how. I know how. I can share that skill set. So there are two pieces to the puzzle here. One is knowing where there is. The other is having the skill set to get there from here. I think both are within reach. And the prize at the end of all of that is more years in life, more life in years.
Yeah.
Healthy people have more fun. They really do.
You know, I think it's have more life in your years and be healthy and have more fun. It's a different prize to what's marketed. You know, what's marketed is the slim girl on the front cover of a magazine, or you know, the fit marathon runner, or you know, that's the prize. And I think it's a really beautiful concept that, or not even a concept, but a reality that it kind of shifts things in the minds of most people when we listen to something like what you're sharing here. Is that it's the prize is individual, the prize is personal, and the prize is not about the way that we're going to look to the outside world. The prize is about how we feel internally.
So absolutely.
Then there's more years in life and more life in years.
More life in years. Yeah, and of course, you know, the things that you do, Karen, to make yourself healthy tend to make you beautiful as well. And so you will like what you see in the mirror. And if you want to run in the marathon, you'll be fitter and healthier. You probably can do that. Exactly.
You'll
right.
have the energy to do it. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But it is up to you. And, you know, we sometimes forget that, you know, we shouldn't wag our finger and tell people, you should be, I'm a doctor, you need to be healthy. No, it's not, you know, it's not to satisfy me. It's to have a better life. You are the boss.
Yeah.
And it is possible. And again, incredible to think that 80% of all the heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes that we see in the world around us, 80% of it could go away if we simply use the knowledge we already have about healthy diet, physical activity, avoiding tobacco, and ideally getting good sleep, managing our stress, and having strong social connections to friends and people we love. That's the magic formula right there. You don't need pixie dust.
Yeah.
You don't need to reach for your credit card and, you know, sign up for the latest fad. the power to do all of that really does reside with you. It's incredible. So, you know, my mission in life is to see more people take advantage of that power, because it's been lying latent for far too long.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you so much for coming on the couch and sharing that with us. You know, there's
My pleasure.
There's about, we've got about 189,000 people who follow the couch in various ways. So you've made a really big contribution to the people who listen and their families, because you've just made it easy and you've given us a recipe for richness there. That's easy. It's a no-brainer. And it's like you say, we don't have to go and sign up for somebody else's program and listen to yet another source of advice when we've innately got it from an intellectual point of view. We've had it all along. We've just got to dive in and trust ourselves. Dr. Katz, you're an amazing man. You're an absolutely amazing man. I'm so glad that we found you.
Likewise, Karen. Well, that's one heck of a couch. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So to all of our viewers and to all of our listeners, this has been for me a really amazing show. And I love how humble and calm Dr. David Katz is about his message. It's as if he just takes all the pressure out and takes all the stress out. And I know if you're anything like me, sometimes this whole diet debate of sugar and fat and this and that, oh, that rhymed. I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. Yeah. Look at that. So, but sometimes all of that in and of itself causes unbelievable stress, which then just gets compounded on top of the daily stresses. Why are we doing it to ourselves? Because at the end of the day, we're all going to land up in a box. I think it's all about, as Dr. David Katz says the same way, it's about the ride. It's about the journey. Let's stop the stress of being pulled from pillar to post, and let's go inside and begin to trust what we innately know. And I love that. So thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that you guys have really enjoyed this show. Hang around, because Karen's Corner is coming up right after this. So we've just heard from Dr. David Katz, who I don't know if you agree with me, is an absolute legend. The man is so cool, calm and collected. He was brilliant. So we were talking about food, nutrition and just getting back to the basics. And I don't know if you remember, I made mention of me doing some research on coconut water. This is why, because coconut water is a huge component of my breakfast. So I thought it would be really cool to do a review on coconut water. But before I go there, I want to tell you guys who I'm wearing today, because Myers, again, as you know, they're one of our primary sponsors and they are so generous with the clothes that they provide for me. And it's so much fun to just be able to go into Myers and pick whatever I want. So today I'm wearing Jason Brunsdon, again, as I did a couple of weeks ago, in his Black Label Connect collection. I love his clothes and they're a perfect fit. So let's have a look at the coconut water. Because all coconut waters are not the same. I've done loads and loads of research for you, and I'm just going to read a couple of notes here, and then I'm going to tell you a story on each of them. Coconut water in general has been used in Jamaica for years as a heart tonic. It's also used in war times where they don't have availability of blood supply. They intravenously inject coconut water into injured soldiers to keep them alive. Blew my mind when I read that. It's full of electrolytes, 99% fat-free, low carb, and has natural sugars in it. And I'm going to tell you about the natural sugars in it, because per 100 grams, it's actually quite low. Has full of zinc, selenium, iodine, sulfur, magnesium, boron, molybdenum, I don't know why I even wrote that down because I can't say it, molybdenum, ascorbic acid, and full of B group vitamins. That was just enough for me to know that I was doing the right thing for my body when I was making my breakfast. And sometimes if I'm thirsty throughout the day, or if I've been for a run, or I haven't had a chance to get my hands on a lot of water, I'll throw down a coconut water, purely because it's so hydrating. So I can throw down a litre of coconut water, whereas normally I might have to throw down 2 litres of actual water. It makes a huge difference. So I went looking for some really top-notch coconut waters, and these are my favourites. I've already done a review outside of the show, and I've narrowed it down to these three. So the first one is Nakula. Nakula's got an amazing story behind it. The fellow who distributes or brings Nakula into the country and makes it and distributes it, his name's Lachlan, and he's amazing. You know, he was really, really sick and he was in Bali and he couldn't get himself well because he was constantly getting sick from the food and his environment. He was really ill. His father was watching his son deteriorate and become so dehydrated that he put his son onto the local coconut water. And from the coconut water going into his system, I can't quite remember the amount of time that Lockie mentioned to me, but it wasn't long and it was quite miraculous. He recovered fully. And it was from that point on, Lockie and his dad decided that the whole world needs to know about what coconut water can do for us and how healing it is for the body. So Lockie and his sister now have this company called Nakula. It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm going to tell you about the taste of each of these in just a moment. And Nakula is organic. So it's really important that we get that distinction that Nakula is organic. I'm going to go to our second organic coconut water in the marketplace. And this one's also gorgeous. This is sea coconut water. Now this one is just, it's a real raw coconut. And I'm going to tell you, actually, bugger it, I'm just going to tell you about the taste of it now because they're very different in their flavors. The rawness of the sea coconut water makes it really easy to drink, and you can drink lots of it because it doesn't have a real sweet flavor. It still has the same percentage of sugars in it, naturally occurring sugars, but the flavor of sea coconut water, it's very, very different to Nakula, and they're both organic. So I really recommend that you guys go out and do a test for yourselves. As I said, these are the top three that I discovered out of about 20 on the marketplace. I tested for taste, I tested for naturalnessity, because they're not allowed to have anything added and they're not allowed to come from concentrates. It must be pure, unadulterated coconut water. And the other thing that I love about these, all of them, is that the coconut water doesn't oxidize because of the way that they're packaged and manufactured. So, or not manufactured, but put into the packaging. So you're just getting pure coconut water that's never seen the light of day until it hits your lips, which is really cool, because most naturally occurring fruits will have an oxidization period. So when you open up your coconut water, get it into you. Don't let it sit in the fridge for days on end. And you wouldn't want to anyway. I mean, they're all in really great sizes for you to just throw down while you're on the run. Nudie coconut water is another one that I found that absolutely I love it. For a couple of reasons, Nudie comes in a 1 liter container. You don't get it in the smaller sizes. And Nudie, from a perspective of making my breakfasts, I will have this whole lot go into my blender and then I'll put it into a jar and take it with me when I leave to go speaking. And that gives me plenty of nutrients and food while I'm on the run. So I'll drink half of my breakfast smoothie in the morning and then the rest of it comes with me. So I'm not having to worry about whether I'm going to get lunch or not get lunch. It just goes in my bag or it goes into my little freezer pack that I carry. And I've got enough food to get me through until dinner if I need to. Nudie has got a spectacular flavor, beautiful flavor. Now, it's not organic and not from what I can see, but I, you know, honestly, for me, it doesn't actually matter because the flavor of the Nudie is extraordinary. So I'm just going to show you each of them really quickly so that you can see the differences in the colors. So this is the sea coconut water, and this is Nudie. So C is a little more yellow, Nudie's a little more white, and then we've got Nakula, which is a little more yellow again. So these are our two organics, and you can see that there's a distinct difference in the color of them. And there's also a difference in the taste. So that's a beautiful, and it's quite sweet. It's a beautiful, raw, gorgeous, refreshing flavor. Absolutely divine. And then you've got Nakula, which is another, well, they're all my favorites. So I'm not going to say any one of them is better than the other because they're not. They're all gorgeous. Oh, this is divine. This is absolutely fabulous. It's got a beautiful, refreshing, sweet taste to the palate, but it's not so sweet that it makes you feel sick, which is what I found with some of the other coconut waters. And I couldn't stomach them, especially in the amount that I drink them. As I said, I would probably do about a liter a day. Mixed with water, but I have maybe 2.5 to 3 liters of liquid every day, not including coffees and teas or anything, but actual raw waters. And then here's the Nudie. Now the Nudie is very similar in taste to the Nakula. It's not quite as raw tasting as sea coconut water, but a little bit less sweet than the Nakula. Now, all of these are organic, are not organic. They're, well, obviously Nakula and sea coconut water are organic, but they're all, like I said, completely natural with nothing added. No sugars. Nothing has adulterated the actual pureness of the coconuts. So it's just a case of the batch, when they've been grown, how long the water's been inside of the nut, and that determines the sweetness of each of the coconut waters. I hope you've enjoyed my review on coconut water. Don't hold back. It's absolutely fabulous, chock full of vitamins, beats any sports drink on the marketplace. And if you want it to, if you don't like it quite so sweet, water it down. Put it with some gorgeous ice. Mix it into your smoothies. I even use it in my cooking, although that's quite a crime. But it could, because it's such so delicious. But I use it for everything. Go for it. These are my three favorites. Try them out and see which ones you guys like. Post your comments on our Facebook page or also on our website and let me know which ones you like. Also, let me know if you've got any questions about the interview that we did today with Dr. Katz, because I'm sure that it sparked lots of thoughts and lots of questions that you guys would like to answer. And I'm going to get him back on the show. You watch. We'll have him back. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show today. You've enjoyed the review. It's been an absolute treat to share it with you once again. Thanks for that. And I'm going to see you right here, back again on Karen's Couch next week. See you later. Bye for now.